From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually to meet workforce demands and grow West Virginia's economy. Learn more at wvhepc.edu. The W. Page Pitt School of Journalism and Mass Communications at Marshall University, providing hands-on education in advertising, public relations, and journalism across all media platforms.
At the legislature today, delegates debate an amendment that, if adopted, would allow West Virginia doctors to prescribe marijuana. And things get heated in the Senate over the confirmation proceedings of two democratically connected appointees. Governor Justice is once again pressing lawmakers to get a budget out quickly. So we'll check in with the House and Senate finance chairs coming up on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Ashton Mara. Governor Jim Justice held his third press conference of this legislative session today, once again urging lawmakers to present a budget plan. It's day 30 of this 60-day legislative session, and Justice says Republican leaders told both him and the public they'd share their plan at the halfway point.
That it doesn't matter to me if you're a Republican, a Democrat, or an Independent, have I not? But I want to tell you today just this. You better think of the courage and the boldness and the creativity and the hope and the pathway that the Democrats are up there trying to give us. Now, you have some within the Republican Party that are doing the same thing. And then you've got a group or a faction that is actually going nowhere. I've said it over and over and over. We cannot cut ourselves into oblivion that slows the heart rate down where we can't recover.
That faction, Justice says, isn't made up of Republican leaders, but he says there are Republican members of both chambers who are putting their party before their state. Critical words from the governor, at least in part, aimed at our guests tonight. Joining us this evening are the House and Senate Finance Chairs, Delegate Eric Nelson and Senator Mike Hall. Gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
The governor critical of your chambers tonight, asking where is that budget plan? So where are we in the process? Senator, do you want to start with a response to the governor today?
Well, you know, I would say that it's outlined in our Constitution that we are to do a budget. And when I entered this session this year, and I went through that last year, and Eric and I have been through, now this is our third one. Obviously, this is the most stressful one in terms of the shortfall of the revenue. But my comments and plan were, if you look back, what I said was the first 30 days, and I think Eric's done the same, we would look at the expenditure side, basically what money should be spent, and or you know where can you go, and we have a process of doing that, and in the past it's never been completed until day 40, 50 when I've been around, but there's never been a time that you've had this kind of revenue problem. So what we've done is we've broken our group up into four little working groups, and most of them are done. We kind of know what we believe would be a budget spending plan that would work for the state. It would not really spend much more money than last year, if at all. That's kind of our goal. The revenue estimate is a couple hundred million underneath that. And he's the one that set the revenue estimate. So the plan, and then the next thing we do is decide, okay, here's where we are on the spending. And we're gonna have a caucus tonight. You know, we will present a spending plan of some sort in the next couple, 3 days. But I would tell the public, read the Constitution. We have 60 days, and when you pass bills, they affect it. So our plan is going to reflect bills. When he introduced us a budget, he introduced a balanced budget. introduces a budget that spent $500 million more than the money he said was available to spend. So he introduced a plan that included huge tax increases. He's changed those a couple times. I think, you know, we're going to have a meeting, I think, within the first of the week and look at whatever sort of revenue measures may be acceptable to people. And that's where we are. So we're not behind schedule. We're way ahead of schedule.
Delegate, you have to admit, though, that the pressure is because there is so much uncertainty in the public.
Well, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty with this budget. And, you know, we have a governor that's in there for the first time. He has many secretaries that are their first time in the political world. And they're just now stepping into management roles. Our first 30 days, I don't think we put any 30-day target out there, never have. But our first 30 days are committed to vetting the agencies, all the agencies. And just like Mike mentioned, we have work groups in the House. I have 14 of them, bipartisan. And we have spent a tremendous amount of time vetting that, because there's a difference between the governor's introduced $4.5 billion budget and revenues that he put on the table that are $450 million less than that.
Now, Senator, you pointed out that the governor's budget actually increases spending. The Senate president and the speaker were on the program last night and pointed to the same thing, that the budget deficit is so big because the governor wants to spend more money. But the governor said in his press conference today a $500 million deficit this year, which grows to $700 million next year if we don't do anything to increase revenues or to take in more taxes. The Senate president is using the phrase, hold the line on spending. We're not going to increase spending at all. But even so, if the deficit is going to grow next year, how do we make it through without increasing revenue?
I've looked at the last three, or not, I can show you the last three numbers. We've spent around the $4.2 billion mark all the last 3 years. And so there are things in there that kind of naturally grow, but actually our school aid formula reduced a demand on the budget this year, because our student population has declined. So there, I'm not exactly sure where he's coming up with that, but we're going to address the problem. We're working together to do that. I don't see that big of a difference, but there definitely is going to have to be a need for some sort of revenue measure of something, or we can go back and decide as a state. And it would be a tough decision that we're just going to spend the money we've got. And there's a great slice of our population that is their view. You know, it just like in your own home, you can't spend any more money than what you have. And we're told right now we've got a little over $4 billion to spend. We've tried to work on budgets that actually get to that number. We have three scenarios that actually get to that number.
Delegate, the Liberty Caucus introduced their own version of the budget today in the House. I've spoken with another Democratic delegate who says he plans to introduce his own version of the budget. What does that say to you, that other members are stepping up and saying, look, this is my plan, let's move forward?
Well, I think we're all very concerned about where our situation is with this budget, a situation that we've not faced in recent history. And the Liberty Caucus, I believe, has introduced something. Other members have come with suggestions. I fully ask all of them to come up to finance, get involved with the process, help me and the other finance committee members look throughout this budget, because it's a team effort. It's not just the finance chairs that do this solo. And I've not fully looked at that yet, so I'm not in a position to comment on that.
Senator, I want to ask, we have just a few moments left, but you said on the floor yesterday that you believed leaving town last year, as the legislature did, without approving a budget was a constitutional problem. Can you explain why that is very briefly, and do you plan to do that this year?
Well, actually, I was in consultation with some of the folks that look at the Constitution very carefully on our side. We looked at the Constitution. It clearly says that the 60-day session it can be extended for a period of time. The regular session can be expended to complete the budget. The reason is that we have this rule that says bills come from the House to the Senate, Senate to the House. We can't pass any more bills after the 45th day. So we've got all kinds of bills that we work on right up to the end that may affect the budget. So logic would tell you, why would you put a budget document out there you may have to change if it's going to be affected by the passage of final things on the last day? So that's why the Constitution anticipates that. But it's clear that this is a bill that's mentioned, and the governor is, it says in there, the governor shall extend the session as long for the length of time in his judgment it takes to complete the budget. Leaving town and waiting for a governor to call you back in town was never their intention, and I don't think it's right, even though it happened. I'd like the court or somebody to weigh in on it. Our number one responsibility is this, and we are working on it. And, you know, the governor said, I would have started on this budget from day one. I heard him say that this afternoon. Well, we did. He did. We did. We were working on it long before day one, quite frankly.
Senator Mike Hall and Delegate Eric Nelson, chairs of the finance committees, thank you so much. We meet three more members of the 83rd West Virginia Legislature tonight from Southern West Virginia in this edition of Meet Your Lawmakers.
Sue Klein is a Republican from Wyoming County. She was appointed to represent the state's 9th senatorial district by former Governor Earl Ray Tomlin in 2015. She won election to the seat in 2016. Klein works as a realtor. She chairs the Committee on Interstate Cooperation. Roy Cooper was elected to the House of Delegates in 2012. He's a Republican from Summers County. Delegate Cooper represents the state's 28th House District. He is a retired school teacher, farmer, and served in the U.S. Navy. John O'Neill represents the state's 28th House of Delegates District. He's a Republican from Raleigh County. Delegate O'Neill was first elected to the House in 2010. He serves as the Assistant Majority Leader.
So far this legislative session, two bills have been introduced in both the House and Senate to legalize medical marijuana in the state. One has support by both parties, but neither have been placed on a committee agenda. Today, Democrats in the House attempted to change the scheduling of marijuana so it could be prescribed by doctors in an attempt to get around the committee process. Liz McCormick reports on the debate over the amendment today.
House Bill 2526 focuses on adding drugs to the state's scheduling system, a classification of both prescription and illicit drugs. These classifications are referred to as Schedule 1, 2, 4, and 5. So, Schedule 1 drugs are substances seen as having no medicinal purposes and cannot be prescribed by a doctor. These are illegal substances, like heroin or cocaine. Schedule 4 drugs are controlled substances, such as Xanax, an anxiety medication often abused in West Virginia, that can be prescribed by a doctor. Marijuana is a Schedule 1 substance, illegal and seen as having no medicinal value. But 28 states and the District of Columbia have approved medical marijuana laws. On the floor today, though, Democrats attempted to change its classification to allow doctors to prescribe it in West Virginia. Democrat Isaac Spinagle from Pendleton County, a sponsor of the amendment, argued it's time for West Virginia to vote green on this issue.
The people are with this issue. 60-some percent of West Virginians are tired. They want this legislative body to act. And they're going to get a chance today to see who's finally going to stand up and say, you know what, enough's enough. We're going to allow this, just like the other 28 states, just like Ohio, Pennsylvania, Maryland. We're going to come out of the dark ages and advance forward.
A handful of Republicans spoke in favor of the amendment, many telling emotional stories of loved ones impacted by cancer and other diseases that could have been eased by the drug. But since the federal government considers marijuana an illegal substance, some members of the chamber pointed to the legal liabilities the state could face if they approved the amendment, like Republican Delegate Charlotte Lane.
And doing something as big as what this amendment does, without knowing what the ramifications are, what the unintended consequences are, and all of the questions that we have heard here today, we just should vote no on this amendment, and then if the powers that be will it, then maybe we will get the debate fully and study medical marijuana itself.
Republican Delegate Jordan Hill from Nicholas County pointed out that shouldn't stop them from passing the amendment.
I know there have been arguments, whether it be in committee or on the floor, some folks worried about, well, the federal government, it's illegal, you know. Well, when have we ever said to the, you know, when have we ever paused to say, oh, you know, we're not going to fight the EPA, for instance, because, oh, that's federal. You know, they said, you know, don't do this, so we're not going to do it. No, we fought the EPA, too. I mean, no, it's not a related subject, but still. When have we ever been afraid to stand up to the federal government?
Some delegates in favor of the change say it would still be a controlled substance, controlled by the doctors who prescribe it, like so many other medications. But House Majority Leader Darrell Coles from Morgan County pointed out marijuana is abused too much to be moved to the Schedule 4 classification.
Part of the reason, my friends, that it is Schedule 1 and is having such a struggle to get what I believe there probably are good medical uses to some forms of marijuana, part of the reason it's struggling is because of the high abuse of people smoking dope to catch a buzz and get stoned. It can't be Schedule 4. We would be saying there is a low potential for abuse for marijuana, and that's just not so.
The amendment ultimately failed 35-64. For the legislature today, I'm Liz McCormick in the House.
Senators also spent an extended period of time on the floor today, in part due to a bill that had members crossing party lines to vote for a proposed amendment. Senate Bill 173 is the auto cycle bill. It's come up year after year at the State House. It would permit the usage of the three-wheeled, fully enclosed vehicles and exempt its drivers from having to obtain a motorcycle license. It was amended in the Senate's Judiciary Committee, though, to also remove the requirements for adults over the age of 18 to wear a helmet while driving a motorcycle, something Democratic Senator Ron Stallings of Boone County moved to take out of the bill.
Has nothing to do with auto cycles. Okay, I've read the bill, and it has to do with repealing the motorcycle bill for anyone over 18. And if my amendment passes, it keeps the current law in place.
Stallings, who is a physician, says removing the helmet requirement was called a, quote, organ donor acceleration measure, end quote, by the West Virginia State Medical Association, and keeping it in place will ensure the safety of the state's citizens. Republican Senator Robert Carnes offered the language to repeal the helmet requirement in the chamber's Judiciary Committee. He says because it's a restriction on personal freedoms.
31 states allow the majority of motorcyclists to ride without a helmet. Most of the states around us allow people to ride without a helmet. So this isn't a new and novel concept either. What it really is just a recognition of the personal freedoms that Americans should have, that in many cases and in many ways have been restricted too much by legislative bodies across the country, but now the move is in the other direction.
Democratic Senator Doug Faismeyer agreed with Carnes and told members of his chamber that limiting this choice in the name of safety was just the beginning.
I do not want to have to get a prescription to get a milkshake. It's wrong. What about the individual rights? And we're sitting here slowly giving them away, all in the name of safety and saving. Look, people's going to die. It's going to happen. It's just going to happen. And are we going to sit here and start playing this game of what is and what shouldn't?
Republican senators, however, stood to support Stallings' amendment to keep the helmet requirements in place, including the chamber's only other physician, Senate Health Committee Chair Tom Tacubo.
I know there's a lot of discussion about freedoms and liberties, and I agree with that. But what bill do we not do every single day that doesn't affect somebody's liberty or their freedom? Every single bill we vote on either takes something away or gives something to somebody, but very few times, and maybe I'm sensitive to this for what I do for a living, but there's very few times we're going to have a vote where your finger pressing on this button makes the difference between somebody living or somebody dying. And this is one of those simple votes that we do today, but somewhere down the road, if we take helmets off people, you're going to have a mom, you're going to have a dad that's laying there in the ICU, and their son or their daughter is brain dead because they didn't have a helmet on. And you're going to have that effect, and that's a powerful vote that we all have right now.
Other senators also pointed to the increased number of deaths in states that chose to repeal their helmet requirements. Senator Bob Beach says in Michigan that rate rose by 28%, and now its legislature is reconsidering the measure. Newly appointed Republican Senator Charles Clements also supported the amendment.
There's no one believes in freedom and personal choices more than I do, but how far do you go? Why don't we repeal the seatbelt laws? That's a personal freedom. But I don't think we should, and I don't think we will.
Stalling says removing the helmet requirement for motorcyclists is not just a safety issue, it's a funding issue as well.
We have a Medicaid funding problem. There's no question that this is going to increase the number of people that end up in a nursing home that we have, you know, total care for. Insurance runs out after a while. They may have had insurance. But the state's going to be stuck with a pretty big price tag when you start looking at the number or the percentage increase in serious head injuries.
His amendment was put to a voice vote.
All those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. I declare the amendment adopted.
The provision to remove the helmet requirement for motorcyclists was removed from the auto cycle bill. It will be put to a vote in the chamber tomorrow. Aside from passing legislation, members of the Senate are also tasked with confirming gubernatorial appointments. While Governor Jim Justice has sent plenty of names to the chamber, this morning senators debated two sent by former Governor Earl Ray Tomlin. Two names Jesse Wright reports have deep ties to the state's Democratic Party.
The Senate Confirmations Committee has conducted more than a dozen interviews so far this session with gubernatorial appointees. Former Governor Earl Ray Tomlin sent the chamber a list of 74 names on the first day of the legislative session, names that must be confirmed this year for appointees to keep their positions. Democrats on the floor today protested the removal of two names from that list, Jo Marie Chandler and Belinda Beaufort, both appointees to the Unemployment Compensation Review Board. Senate Minority Leader Roman Prezioso moved to put the names back on the confirmations list, but faced pushback from Republican lawmakers. Senate Majority Leader Ryan Fern says state code requires those appointees to have no other employment and to show the ability to review the appeals to the unemployment board. Fern says Chandler holds another part-time position, making her ineligible under the code. He says both Chandler and Beaufort also lack prior relevant experience.
We had three appointees to this position, and looking through their applications, one of them, I think, did meet these qualifications that are outlined in code. I feel that the other two did not.
The third person named to the unemployment board is a previous member whose term was up for reappointment. But both Chandler and Beaufort have ties to the state Democratic Party. Beaufort is the current chair of the state Democratic Party. Chandler is the daughter of Larry Puccio, the former party chair and consultant to Governor Jim Justice's campaign. Republican Senator Craig Blair said the removal of those two names has nothing to do with party, but with their ability to fill the requirements for the job under the code.
We've confirmed way more Democrats than what we have Republicans on this, and it makes no difference to me. It comes back to the statute that confined us, at least confined me.
Democratic Senator Mike Romano, however, rejected the notion that the two women did not meet the requirements under code. The statute requires the appointees to have, quote, the ability and fitness to adjudicate claims, end quote. Romano pushed Ferns and Republican Senator Greg Boso for the exact abilities the women were lacking. The two senators pointed to the code. Romano called the decision arbitrary and says it's the kind of political partisanship that makes it difficult for the parties to work together.
Particularly in this crisis-filled session where we're all going to need to come together one way or another at the end of this thing. And these kind of decisions really affect our ability to work together. They really affect our ability to trust each other. We're friends, all of us, but we're on different sides. We have different perspectives. We have different philosophies. And when the philosophy no longer is the basis for our decisions, but it's something much more superficial, then that creates the divide that we're never going to be able to bridge.
Democratic Senator Bob Plymel joined Romano in the call to include Chandler and Biafore in the Senate's confirmation list. As a three-member board, the Unemployment Compensation Review Board must have two votes to decide appeals of the unemployment process, and Plymel says without these two members, there would be a delay in decisions.
If I got up and spoke about every member that comes before confirmations that I think, gosh, I don't think they should be on there, it would have been half of the state board members. I mean, why in the world? I mean, we would be up here arguing forever. This is a process that we do.
Prezioso's amendment to return the two names to the list was voted down 13 to 19. Republican Senator Jeff Mullins joined Democrats in the vote.
This has been the Legislature Today. I'm Ashton Mara.
Support for the Legislature Today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually to meet workforce demands and grow West Virginia's economy. Learn more at wvhepc.edu. The W. Page Pitt School of Journalism and Mass Communications at Marshall University, providing hands-on education in advertising, public relations, and journalism across all media platforms. From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.